I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Joy Fielding has a new book, and it's already a bestseller. She's Not There is the name of her latest offering, and I just started, and it's quite a gripping book. 15 years ago, Carolyn was with her husband and two daughters to celebrate her wedding anniversary in Mexico. The trip ends with the unsolved kidnapping of her infant daughter, Samantha. Every year since, Carolyn, now divorced from her husband, Hunter, has to relive the kidnapping whenever the press comes calling. This year, though, she gets a call from a girl claiming to be her long-lost daughter. I'll get Joy, who joins me now, to tell us as much as she can about what happens next. Joy Fielding is the New York Times best-selling author of Someone is Watching, Charlie's Web, Heartstopper, Mad River Road, See Jane Run, and other acclaimed novels. She was first on this program with her book The Wild Zone. When that was published, she divides her time between Toronto and Palm Beach, Florida, but joined me while in Vancouver last week for appearances to promote this new book published by Doubleday. The website for more is at joyfielding.com. Please welcome back to the Planta on the Line program, Joy Fielding. Ms. Fielding, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks for joining us. Pretty good. You know, when they asked if I'd have you on the show again, I said, of course, and the reason is because I remember from our chat a few years ago that our birthdays are the same.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so we're both March 18th.
March 18th, but yeah. you're still significantly younger than I am.
And so that's one of the things. I mean, you never forget these things, I guess, if someone shares your birthday.
That's right. Well, and it's funny, in our family, actually, we have a number of joint birthdays, and I have a nephew who was also born on the 18th of March, and my father and my mother-in-law were born on the same day.
Really?
And I think there's, of course, now I'm drawing a complete blank, but I think there's a few other family members, and that we're all, well, actually, my granddaughter is born on the same day as her father, and it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, you know, it's for the longest time, until I was about, I guess, 25, I was the only one that I knew who had my birthday. Even the celebrities who were born on the 18th of March, I didn't,
right.
I didn't really know, and then as you get older, you find, you know, like I have a cousin who's born the same day that I am, and you know, famous people now, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. But it'll always be our day, so I'll remember
sure.
that. Yeah. So She's Not There, that's the latest book. How many books has it been for you?
I believe it's 26.
Yeah, and did you put them out, say, one a year? Or?
Initially, it's been kind of mostly for the last dozen years or so, it's been one a year. I started out writing one every couple of years. And that was pretty good. And then the publishers asked me if I would, you know, consider doing one a year. And at first that sent me into a complete panic because I thought, oh, God, how am I going to get that many ideas and when am I going to have time to do all this? But an interesting thing happened, and I realized it actually made writing much easier when I was writing one a year because you never get out of the writing mode and the creative juices, such as they are always flowing, and you don't end up spending like a year of anxiety about whether or not you're going to get another idea. They just always appear, and I just kind of kept writing. Then, of course, you run into problems every so often. You know, I changed publishers in the U.S. after, I don't even know what book it was, but after one of my books, and so that kind of cost me a year, and so last year Someone is Watching came out, and that was not with my previous publishers, the people who I'd been with for a dozen years, and although it was with the same publishers in Canada, I want to stress, because they have been wonderful, and so suddenly I'm now back to one a year. So last year was Someone is Watching, and this year is She's Not There, and hopefully by next year I'll have another one out there.
Yeah, and as I said, as we started, I've started reading the book the last couple of days, and it's tough to put down.
Well, I hope so. Thank you very much. It's you know, it's basically two mysteries in one, because it moves back and forth between the present tense and what happened 15 years ago, and of course it was, quote, I guess, inspired by the real-life case of Madeleine McCann, the little girl who disappeared from her parents' hotel room in Portugal about 8 or 9 years ago and has never been seen since. And I remember when I was working out this idea, I just sort of scribbled on a paper, Madeleine McCann 15 years later. and thought, okay, what actually happened to this little girl, and where is she now, and what if the mother, who has been, of course, vilified in the press for the last 15 years and has to deal with her own, you know, monumental guilt, and her marriage is destroyed and everything else, you know, and she has another daughter who was not taken, who was in the hotel room at the time. And I thought, okay, what happens if a girl shows up and says, I'm your daughter? So you have the two mysteries. You have the mystery in the present tense of, is this girl really her daughter? And B, what happened 15 years ago? Exactly what happened? And the challenge as to an author here is to make each story, you know, the story in the present and the one in the past, equally compelling, so that you aren't sort of groaning when suddenly you're back 15 years ago. That story has to be every bit as interesting as what is happening now. And you have those two things happening at the same time, and then ultimately you do find, you know, both mysteries are solved, which, of course, in real life doesn't always happen.
Yeah. So this is how I'm reading it, and I'm curious to know, as the writer, what your reaction is. So I'm reading it, and I'm looking for clues, you know, especially in that first chapter where they're heading off to Mexico, driving down there, and looking for little clues as to what might happen, thinking,
right,
I'm going to solve this before she gets there, you know what I mean?
Well, you see, you know, it's funny. I never try to solve a book when there's any kind of mystery involved, and sometimes I just do, you know, and, you know, I just can sort of figure out what's happening. I'm usually disappointed when that happens, and I've tried, you know, I believe in playing very fair with the reader, so I hate books that suddenly the solution is so convoluted or you're just not in possession of all the facts, so there's no way you could figure anything out. I believe in giving you all the facts and then so it's all there, in fact. It's just that you're not really sure what to look for, and you don't know what is a clue and what isn't. And when I'm writing these things, sometimes I'm thinking, oh my God, am I being too obvious here? Is this like waving the red flag in front of the bull so that people are going to just know immediately? But of course, that's someone who's in possession of all the facts, and the reader hopefully will not pick up on any of the clues. Everything is there. If when you're finished the book, you go back and read it from start to finish, you will see that absolutely everything is there if you want to figure it out.
So,
but I would just say kind of relax and enjoy the ride.
Yeah, well, it is an enjoyable ride thus far, so I mean, I can't wait to finish it. So when we meet these characters for the first time, it's in the present day, if you will, 15 years after the incident. But going back 15 years to where they are in terms, so Hunter and Carolyn are married, they have two daughters, and their marriage, what sort of marriage is that like at that point?
Well, I think that Caroline thinks it's a reasonably happy marriage at that point, and I think probably Hunter does as well, although his standards or his criteria are possibly a little different than Caroline's. And she's not aware of certain other things that are going on. But I would think it would be a marriage that probably would have continued were it not for this, you know, devastating set of circumstances that occur, and the way, you know, different people handle grief and tragedy and things like that. And so, of course, and they have two daughters, one of whom, the older daughter, Michelle, is rather difficult, very needy, and then the two-year-old, who's just a total delight. And, of course, it's the total delight that gets kidnapped. You know, not that I think Caroline's devastation would have been any less had the other daughter been the one who was taken, but the younger child disappears, and you now have this family who really fall apart. You have the mother who is vilified in the press and who feels her own just exorbitant guilt for what happened, because they went out for their anniversary dinner and left the two children sleeping in their room. Now, I had to work very hard to make sure that you had any sympathy for Caroline, because really, I think we do tend to rush to judgment, and it's very easy to condemn somebody for doing that. And, you know, obviously, the obvious truth is you shouldn't leave your children alone ever, and, you know, no matter where you are. And but they do, and they're having dinner in a restaurant that is literally right underneath their room. And they are going up to check on the children every half hour. So the husband, Hunter, has argued that basically it's no different than being in their backyard at home.
Yeah.
Well, of course it is different, but that's part of the rationale, and it is their anniversary, and they're downstairs, and they are checking on the kids, and then, of course, every parent's worst nightmare happens, and they go up to the room, and the baby is gone. And then everybody, I mean, everybody's lives change. The marriage, which, as I say, Caroline, I think, assumed anyway, was in reasonably good shape, just, you know, falls apart for a variety of reasons, probably the main one being the guilt involved,
yeah.
You know, both parties.
Yeah, what I'm enjoying, and I read this in one review, about she's not there, is the, I don't know if research was involved, but you talk a lot about sort of the attendant stuff that happens after an abduction that we probably don't realize happens from the press reports. I mean, you mentioned a prominent disappearance and abduction from a few years ago, and you know, we only know the things that we watch or read about in the press. And so you talk about what sort of what goes on behind the scenes, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Was there research involved in putting that together, say?
You know, not really. I don't know if I'm lazy or I'm just intuitive or what it is. I one of the reasons I write fiction is because I don't like to do research.
Mm.
And I really only do as much research as I have to in order to make the story believable. So I really like to go more on my own gut feeling, more kind of a casual research. I will do research if I need to. But in this case, it was more just, for example, with the case of Madeleine McCann, the little girl who disappeared from Portugal, I'm aware of, you know, how the parents were treated in the press and how every year they dredge up. You know, it's the anniversary, she's been gone for 5 years, you know, and the cover of People magazine, that sort of stuff. I'm not sure if there was a cover of People or not, but...
It seemed like it, yeah.
You know, this sort of thing is always dredged up, and I know from just, again, casual research that, you know, families who have suffered a great tragedy, you know, either the death of a child or missing, you know, often that does not... The marriage does not survive. People grieve in different ways, and it's you know, marriage is hard at the best of times. So when you have something like that, I think it emphasizes the differences that you know, the differences between people, and you can't help but blame each other and yourself, and certainly. Again, raising children and raising a child who has been left behind, you know, the child who was not kidnapped, her own, sort of, she's grown up in the shadow of this adored younger child, and who feels like at one point, and you won't probably have reached this point in the book, but like at one point where she says, "Do I have to disappear for you to love me?"
Mm.
This kind of anguish, you know, that everybody feels because there is a big hole in everybody's life. I don't think you necessarily have to research that. You just have to think how you might react, how you might feel, how, given the people that you care about in your own life, what if this sort of horrible thing were to happen to you? What, you know, how might everybody react? You know, then I just create this family. This family is not the McCanns. It is not, you know, it's a totally fictional family. And I just, you know, I make it up.
Yeah, is there one character, though? I mean, well, I'm alluding to something that I've read already about a character in the book that's probably based on someone in your own family?
Oh, Well, as my older daughter said to me at one point, Mom, I no longer feel guilty about taking your money. My older daughter is virtually present in most of my books. She was a handful. She's all grown up now, and she is lovely. But there were about 10 years there where she was a little less than lovely. And so she tends to pop up in various guises, and so there is quite a bit of her in Michelle. But yes and no. It's an exaggeration. It's a totally different set of circumstances. But she's probably the closest to a character who is based on anybody in particular. Other than that, it's really much more. I use anecdotes, obviously, from my own life occasionally when you hear stories about childhoods and stuff like that. So some of the little stories in there are things that I draw on from my own life. But none of these characters are me or my family. It's just sort of how I think, God forbid, I might have reacted if I had been in that situation.
What about your grandmother?
Oh, I forgot about her, and you're absolutely right. If you read the acknowledgments,
mm-hmm. Which I have, yeah.
Yes. My father's mother, my grandma Mary, who is vividly brought to life in this book, she is and she isn't the character. Yes, it's my poison pen letter, I guess, to a woman who was really not the nicest person in the world. I don't really know what her problem was, but she kind of made everybody around her miserable and seemed to relish doing that. So she was the kind of person I've kind of written about her before. In Heartstopper, there was a character, Grandma Rose, who was also drawn on her a bit. She was just a really nasty person, and so a number of the things that Grandma Mary says in this book were straight out of my grandmother's mouth. When I had my second daughter in the hospital, for example, my grandmother walked into the hospital room and said, "Another stinking girl." So that just gives you an idea.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I put phrases like that in Mary's mouth in the book. So absolutely, but I guess I've tried my best to forget about her.
So how do you write a book like this? Because it takes place now, and then it takes place 15 years ago. When you sit down to start a project like this, do you have a sense of where it's going? And in terms of writing it, do you write the 15 years ago before you say write the present day? Or?
Oh, no. I wrote it very much the way you're reading it. I knew that I was going to be going back and forth through time, so my main concern was to make the backstory, what was happening 15 years ago, as compelling as what was happening in the present. And so that you kind of were kind of loath to leave either time. What I didn't want was for the action to stop dead, which is what happens when you do too many flashbacks. Your action in the present tends to come to a total stop. And I wanted to make sure that what was happening 15 years ago was every bit as interesting as what was happening in the present. So I had two separate, completely separate mysteries going on here. The one of, is this really Caroline's daughter, and what exactly happened 15 years ago? Part of the interest in what happened 15 years ago is that you know what happens, yeah, but you don't know how it happens. So you're interested to see how that progresses. In the present, you have the mystery of whether or not this is, in fact, the daughter and what's going to happen there. So that both halves of the story are good. And when I was writing the book, I knew that I was going to have to go, now this is what I'm doing, this is what's happening in this chapter, and now I'm going back here and I'm going to take it up to a certain point. You want to make sure that you leave the reader at the end of every chapter wanting to come back to find out what's happened. And so it actually wasn't that difficult. What was difficult to keep track of was the time, because while I was 15 years ago, it was okay, but then I start moving up to so that then it's 10 years ago, yeah, and then 4 years ago or whatever. And keeping those timelines straight was not always easy, especially when Caroline goes back to work and I have to make sure that everything coincided, because, you know, if you slip up and you make a mistake, you get all these emails from people telling you that you made a mistake. So I was very careful to make sure that everything followed, but that was the tricky part. I knew that certain things had to happen at certain times, but I also knew that I had two very compelling mysteries going on. So that book was really not that hard to write. It was one of the some books are harder than others. This one was one of the gifts.
It's very enjoyable, as I said. Yeah. So you mentioned emails that you get from readers. Do you get a lot of those in terms of say criticism, say from people who've read your books?
Mostly the emails I get are wonderfully complimentary. Most people who write just say, you know, how much they love the books, how much enjoyment all the books have, you know, my books have been, you know, been for them. They're very, very complimentary. Occasionally you get one from somebody who's obviously having a bad day, and they sometimes they're just like their corrections.
Yeah.
With one book, I believe again it was Heartstopper, where I mentioned it takes place in a fictional town in Florida, and I said it was east of Fort Lauderdale. Well, if you go east of Fort Lauderdale, you're in the Atlantic Ocean. Clearly, I meant to say west, and nobody picked up on it. Like, I missed it, the publishers missed it, my editors, the copy editors, everybody missed it. And so, of course, I got a number of emails from people pointing out that it couldn't have been east, it had to have been west. So, things like that. Sometimes, once I referred to something as being a symphony and it was a sonata, I got letters on that. You know, you really wonder how, you know, people have so much time on their hands that they're actually writing you about that. But computers have made it that much easier.
Yeah.
Occasionally, you'll get a really nasty letter, and really very occasionally. I've only had a couple where somebody has written something kind of nasty, and I answer those as well, unless they're really clearly mentally unstable, then I stay away from those.
Yeah, you know, there was one review on Goodreads that really interested me, and I'm curious to know your thoughts. The reviewer, and I didn't, I guess I could have looked up where this reviewer was from. They said that they really enjoyed your writing and could relate to it because you're from Toronto.
Oh.
And I thought that was particularly interesting because you do divide your time between Toronto and Florida.
Right.
And I guess what I'm really wondering is what I guess the Toronto connection had to do with your writing. And do you feel that from where you're from, does that affect how you write?
Well, I'm not really sure. I have a Canadian sensibility, and I'm a product of a big city, and I live right downtown, and so maybe there's a certain amount of relatability to that. I'm also, as a Canadian, maybe a little more level-headed than some of my U.S. counterparts, who I think at the moment, you know, the country down south there seems to have lost its way. And maybe it's just a voice of sanity that they're relating to, or maybe the critic was from Toronto. I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't actually read any of those reviews.
Yeah, I just looked on it for a few minutes just been preparing for this, and you have some really thoughtful readers out there. I mean, you mentioned
I'll have to look at them then. You know, I only read the reviews I get sent, and I haven't seen too many of them, so that might be quite interesting.
Yeah.
To me.
Well, you mentioned working for towards one a year. So at this point, we're speaking in late April. Are you working on a book now?
I'm 15 chapters into the next book, which will probably run around 40 chapters, I guess. I mean, I don't really know how many chapters there will be, but I guess I'm at about 35,000 words, and I aim for around 100,000. So you know, I'm hoping I will have it done by the end of the summer.
Yeah, and so do you find, like, because you're on tour now here in Vancouver, do you write while you're on tour, or do you have to write, say, at home? Or
no, I write at home. I like my computer, and I like a big computer. I can't work on a laptop or an iPad or something. I like a nice big keyboard. I like a nice big screen. I like my desk.
Yeah.
I could write anywhere. I mean, I'm one of those people. I'm very fortunate. I actually could write anywhere, and I can write in the middle of a hurricane because I can tune everything out. But I don't have to, so I don't. You know, I have my room and my condo, and that's where I work. And when I travel, that's my opportunity to read or just relax and also let my subconscious work on other ideas or just work through problems that I'm having. You know, I know that I have to get from point A to point B in the book, and I'm kind of not quite sure how I have to get there. And so I let my subconscious do the work, and I just relax.
Yeah, and in terms of your day, do you have a specific time that you're best at writing?
I'm best in the morning, but I can work again at any time. If I'm busy, the nice thing about writing is that you have the flexibility to create your own schedule. So if I'm busy one morning and I'm not busy in the afternoon, then I'll just work in the afternoon. If too many days go by and I am not working in the, you know, my days are just too busy, and I'm not too tired at night, then I'll work for a few hours at night. If there's nothing on TV and I'm got a lot of energy and my eyes aren't too tired, then I'll work. Especially toward the end of a book, then it's coming faster and I'm more eager to, you know, things are kind of working themselves out. So I can work at any time, but given my druthers, I would like sort of 4 uninterrupted hours from say 9 to 1.
Yeah.
That would be ideal.
Joy, it's nice talking again. Congratulations on this book and continued good luck with it. I can't wait to finish it.
Oh, well, thank you. I hope you'll let me know what you think.
I will, yeah. I'll email you.
Please.
The website, joyfielding.com. The book is called She's Not There. It's published by Doubleday. It's author Joy Fielding. Join me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.